Welcome to Phase One, a podcast brought to you by the Emerging Professionals Committee at IPS, Integrated Project Services, LLC. We're your hosts, Ashley Martins.
And Moazzam Khan.
And we're back with our sixth episode.
Thanks to everyone who has been listening and giving us feedback on our previous episodes. It's been fun to talk with and introduce our listeners to some IPS employees that you might not have otherwise met.
As always, our goal here at Phase One is to give you insights into the life sciences industry, whether it be career advice, current events happening in the industry, or speculating on what the future holds. In today's episode, we're going to be talking to Glenn Slaymaker, a senior director in our EMEA region.
Glenn is based out of Birmingham, United Kingdom. He will share with us his experience working in the UK office and broadly within the life sciences industry, and also give us insight into how a team can work successfully, even when they operate across the globe. So without further delay, let's introduce Glenn. Hi, Glenn. How are you?
Hi, guys. Great to be here. Thanks very much for inviting me.
Hi, Glenn. Thanks so much for joining us on the Phase One podcast today. So let's get this interview started. So what is your current job title and role at IPS?
Hi. Okay, so my current role is I'm the senior director for the UK business. So the UK team has grown really fast as part of the European business over the last 5 years. So we've now got around 120 people, and we've been delivering projects across life science sector in various parts of Europe, including the United Kingdom. So I'm proud that I'm part of a really great and growing team.
So Glenn, tell us more about where you're located in the UK.
Okay, so we're located in the middle part of the United Kingdom. It's in on the outskirts of a big city called Birmingham. So yeah, it's known as the West Midlands. So right in the middle of the country.
Cool. So where did you grow up?
Not far away at all. So I grew up in a city called Coventry. So not famous for much, just Lady Godiva. That's the only thing that I can think of that's famous that's associated with Coventry. And really where our office is probably nearer to Coventry, actually, than it is to Birmingham city centre. So we're kind of right on the outskirts. Great thing is it's 10 minutes from my house. So it's perfect location.
So tell us, Glenn, how did you end up in your current location?
So obviously I originally grew up in Coventry, as I said, quite near, but in the early days of my career, I actually worked in the construction industry, more on the construction side of the business. So I ended up in the northwest of the country, a place called Warrington, which is sort of equidistant between Liverpool and Manchester, which are fairly famous cities in the UK. And then around about sort of 10 years ago, I just got a great career opportunity to come back to what I've always considered sort of my home city. So it was part professional decision and part personal decision to come back to really my hometown. So feel very, very lucky, you know, that I could combine those two things together at the same time.
That sounds like a great opportunity and glad it worked out.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. Side note, if we were to go to the office, I'd be driving an hour to the office. So hearing like, oh, a 10-minute drive, I'm like, what?
That was exactly the same for myself. So when I used to live in the Northwest, I'd have to travel on, I think it was 4 different motorways to get from home to office. That was like 45, 50 minutes. And then the first job that I got when I came back to the Midlands was actually a train journey to get into the centre of Birmingham. You'd never drive. It's just too difficult, too busy. So now 10 minutes door to door. Wow, that is amazing.
So what type of schooling did you go to? What college, university, or trade school?
When I first left school, I got an apprenticeship, a technical apprenticeship. So I went to a place called Henley College, which was in Coventry. And that started with kind of like a combination of machining skills. So in kind of workshops within a college environment, as well as something called a BTEC, which is further education. So that was what I started with. Then I decided to take a break. I was sponsored to do a degree in mechanical engineering. Again, that was at Coventry University. So I did my honours degree there. A little later on in my career, as I really came sort of away from engineering and the technical side, more into project management, which is where most of my career has been spent, really. I ended up then going to University of Manchester and did a master's degree in project management in parallel to sort of my career. That was difficult because trying to do a master's degree, you know, with young children, they were babies at the time, you know, they're sort of grown up now and working full time. So that was kind of tough. You know, the BTEC and the degree, they were good. The master's, that was hard work.
Well, congrats on getting your master's. I know like that's not something many people do. So great job.
Thank you.
So Glenn, when you chose your major or concentration of study, did you know you wanted to pursue a career involving the life science industry?
Not at the time. I think that sort of mechanical engineering where I started was kind of a natural progression for a company I was working for at the time, which was a really big organization called Cortals. So they were a huge fiber and chemical manufacturing organization. And I think as the years went by, you know, the company itself diversified, you know, a little bit. So, you know, I've been kind of lucky in the, you know, during my career, I've worked in you know, chemicals and fibers and food, oil and gas, as well as pharmaceutical and biotechnology. There was always a plan to be in engineering, and there's always a plan to be in industry. But the life sciences kind of like, you know, happened, you know, as sort of life kind of continued. You know, I feel very lucky that I've been able to get involved in so many different things over the years in so many different ways.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I kind of just stumbled into the life science industry myself as well. I was had an internship out of my master's program in engineering, and it was the only internship I got, believe it or not, for that semester. And it was at a pharmaceutical manufacturing facility, one that we actually do work with here sometimes. So I started working, interning there, ended up with a full-time job. And then within a couple of years, wanted to switch to design. So it is interesting how life kind of just happens like that. But it does feel very nice to be part of an industry that creates such important products that improve people's quality of life in such a tangible and immediate way, you know?
Absolutely. And you know, nothing can be truer than our experiences over the last 12 months, 18 months to actually be, you know, a small part of the solution with what the world has gone through. It's you know, it's quite an honor to be in that position, I think, for all of us.
Of course. Were you able to have any involvement in any projects in the UK related to the COVID vaccine? And can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So we have been involved in the UK. One particular project our team have been working very, very hard on, and that's for a new fill finish facility. So it's a contract manufacturing organization that's based in the UK. And we've been involved in the technical side, so very much just the design and engineering side of the project. The team that have worked on that, I mean, you know, our teams work incredibly hard on all the projects, but obviously, you know, schedule demands on COVID response projects is incredibly tough. And the team, you know, they've worked really hard, and you know, I hope they feel, you know, pretty proud of themselves for what they've achieved so far.
Absolutely. I know that even, so I had a small part in helping out the Novartis facility in Germany. That's now, this is back in 2019, I was helping out that facility and with some design work. And now they're actually using some of the design work that me and the team here did to help manufacture the COVID vaccine. Just having that small connection, even though it was not intentional work on the COVID project, I'm still very proud of. And I fully intend to put that on my resume that I was able to help out with that. You know, so it's definitely a good feeling, I think, very rewarding for not just the people working directly, but also indirectly, and anybody in our organization. I think they should feel very proud that we were so deeply involved in all these various COVID projects all across the world to help deliver real solutions to people.
Yeah, I totally agree. Everybody that's been involved across the world, you know, we know it's been tough. We know it's been challenging. And, you know, the business just appreciates every last bit of effort that people are putting in. So.
Okay, so besides working on the COVID vaccine and working on things that are very relevant right now for the pandemic, what else about working in the life sciences industry is so important to you? Like, why do you keep coming to work every day?
You know, I love engineering project environments. Anyway, I think that, you know, they're really rewarding places. I kind of love the project delivery experience. That's probably why my career went more from technical to project management. I just love those kind of big groups of clever, motivated people all working together for the same goal. And we see that a lot. You know, we see that a lot in our industry. There is so much else in life sciences, you know, that's going on at the moment. You know, we're involved in another project which involves ADCs, huge contribution to things like cancer treatment. There's so much going on, you know, that improves, enhances, saves lives. And why wouldn't you want to be part of that? You know, it's so incredible to be part of all these projects that really do make an amazing contribution to society. So it's kind of both. You know, you get the best of both worlds. It's kind of, the projects we deliver have a real impact in life, but also, you know, they can, under the right circumstances, be really enjoyable places to work with great teams of people.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, like, if you're really into helping people and healthcare and, you know, being a part of just helping people's health in general, I think working in a company like IPS and AEC and validation industry that focuses in the life sciences, I think is a great place to work, especially if you're scared of needles like me and can't like physically work in a hospital setting. I think it's a great way to still give back and provide to public health in general without actually having to physically touch, like, you know, any of the squeamish stuff people get with hospitals and all that other stuff.
I think this energy, this passion, you know, for what we do, you know, I see it's how it impresses, you know, our customers. And you know, quite often our customers, they will share, you know, literature, they will share videos, they'll share stories around how, you know, their products are actually helping, you know, helping people. And, you know, some of the advancements that's being made and the way that, you know, that we're making that impact into people's lives is incredible. And, you know, it's just going to get better and better as the years go by, which is fantastic.
So Glenn, since we have such a wide ranging audience, can you help elaborate for some people who may not know what ADCs stand for?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So antibody drug conjugate is what it stands for. And as I say, it's used in things like cancer treatment. And what the drugs are able to do is actually target the cancerous cells. So it's very different to treatments like chemotherapy, which obviously do kill cancer cells, but they also do quite a lot of damage to the rest of the body. This is a much more targeted way of treatment. And by targeting, what that means as well is you can actually deliver a greater payload.
So Glenn, I think you had mentioned that you really enjoy working with a project that has highly motivated people working well together. Let me ask you, now I'm sure in your career you've encountered projects that are lacking some of those features. How do you handle that? And how do you get everybody working together productively towards a goal when sometimes there's lack of communication or people aren't focused or things like that? Because I think that would be very good advice for engineers and project managers and anybody working in an industry across any type of field would be to help understand, how do you handle a project that's gone off the rails and how do you bring it back on track?
That's a big question. I mean, I think there's a number of ways that you can tackle. I think first of all, there's the people side. So it's bringing together people in the right way. So everybody understands their roles and responsibilities and how they interact with each other. And then giving those teams the environment to be able to innovate and to be able to work together in a real collaborative spirit. So a lot of the projects that we do work on in the UK, we talk about collaboration, we talk about one team, because our projects won't just involve our people, they're involved the clients and suppliers and subcontractors and all different types of stakeholders. And so everybody, encouraging everybody to work together in the right way, I think is great. Things like the softer side of things like team building events, you know, getting the team to kind of interact and get to know each other really well. I think all that's really important. So you can never underestimate the softer side of a project. Processes and procedures, there's a necessary amount of structure that needs to go into a project. It needs to be planned out properly. You know, so the pace of that project, you know, we're living in an environment now where fast track projects have gone to warp speed projects. So that takes an awful lot of planning, takes an awful lot of control, awful lot of management and monitoring. So you have to make sure that those controls are in place so that the team have the right direction and everybody feels in control. You know, I think when projects feel out of control, that's when it becomes quite a stressful environment. And we don't just want to carry these projects out and deliver just the basic goals of the project, but we want to make them environments that are enjoyable for people as well. And there's a lot of work that needs to go in to make sure that those environments are right. So it's partly people, it's partly getting the right people in the right space together, and it's partly around that planning and control and making sure that everything, and then, you know, surrounding all of that is just great communication, you know, just great communication so that everybody understands the reason that we're carrying these projects out, what the goals and objectives are, and, you know, and the direction that the project is heading in. And generally, you know, what I do see is a lot of really well executed projects. There's always going to be problems. You know, there'll always be problems, but actually how a team come together and resolve those problems and move forward in that positive, proactive way, that generally will result in a more successful outcome.
That's good. That's really good to hear. And I think that's really solid advice for anybody working in the type of role that you have, you know, so thank you. So Glenn, since we have so many various IPS offices around the world, including America, Europe, the Middle East, and Africa, how do all these various offices work together to produce the results that clients need?
A lot of the projects that are being executed in Europe at the moment do involve a multi-regional approach. So that is, you know, that is working with our colleagues in the US. We're working with colleagues in India as well. And of course, the European regions are always, you know, working together. I think that the relationship is very, very strong, and there are lots of different forums that we're lucky enough to engage in together. So some great examples, you know, people within the European team are part of the global quality team that Ron Salishek heads up, for example. So it's great that we can, you know, understand, you know, what's happening from corporate and global level, from quality management point of view. And we can bring that back to the European team into our project delivery. And then we can also share some of the things that we're doing as well. It's felt very much in the last 5 years like, you know, the European regions were embraced very quickly by the organisation. And we always feel that, you know, we have a voice and that we, you know, that we're kind of listened to and respected, which is fantastic, being the kind of new kids on the block. Obviously, over the last 18 months, we've learned to probably work a little bit better remotely. I still personally believe that you do need face-to-face interaction in multi-discipline EPCMV type projects. But we have learned that there can be flexibility in that and that we can learn together. So that's made the world a smaller place, and it's made certainly project environments easier places to work, you know, from a multi-regional point of view. And that's great, because there's lots of different skills out there in the business. So, you know, you can actually come together to deliver a better product for the customers.
Okay. So I'm curious, how is it working with between Europe and the US, for example, when there's different like regulating bodies that are there? Like how do you coordinate that? Like, let's say like someone from the US, like Khan mentioned earlier, is working on a project in Germany. How do you dictate what different regulations are there?
Sure. You always need expertise within the region that you're working within. So absolutely, you know, great examples, you know, could be, you know, electrical engineering, for instance. There'll be different standards, there'll be different codes. Or it could be in, you know, planning or permitting of a project. There'll be different regulatory authorities you've got to deal with. So there are all these things that need to be considered when executing a project. Obviously, where we have presence, you know, where we have IPS people on the ground, then, you know, that becomes, you know, quite an easy working relationship. Where we don't have that, then IPS are really good at having partners as well. So we embrace partnerships, and you know, we do have you know, a number of local partners in various places across Europe. So although our offices are UK, Ireland, Switzerland, and Germany, you know, we have worked in France, you know, we've worked in Austria, we've worked in Spain, we've worked in Denmark, we've worked in lots of different regions. And of course, you do need to make sure that that local angle is considered. And they say that's where partnerships, you know, play a vital role. And I think that's something that IPS are very, very good at. We've got very strong relationships and partnerships across the world.
That's great.
Yeah, I think you're right, Glenn. I think that having the experts on the ground, understanding the working environment of where we are actually delivering those projects, as well as the regulatory conditions there, really helps you understand how to execute that project properly. It's like, you know, it's like having a war. You need intelligence on the ground there to execute your mission. So it's a lot easier when you have people there that you trust that can provide you the information that is accurate and coming in real time, rather than, like, you know, for example, I wouldn't be able to have done all of the work I did in the IPS project for Novartis over in Germany if we didn't have a Germany office there helping get all of the issues ironed out.
Exactly. Yeah. There are different cultures in every country, in every region, and those need to be understood and respected. There are, you know, very big differences in the supply chain, which makes a big difference in terms of your project execution strategy. You know, what level of detail do you need to go into in the design and engineering? You need to understand, you know, how competent the construction contractors are in taking certain levels of design and realizing them. And it varies. It varies in different regions, and you need to understand that to be able to successfully execute a project.
Of course.
So I know with all of our projects working at warp speed, everyone at IPS is really busy helping out all of our clients. So especially now in the age of the pandemic and all of the projects on our plate, how do you, Glenn, maintain a work-life balance?
So I suppose I like kind of all good sort of ex project managers, I kind of have a routine. I have kind of a plan to my own life. So, you know, for example, I always try to play a round of golf every Friday. I, now that the summer is here in England at long last, you know, you can tee off quite late into the afternoon, evening, and get around in. And that's a nice separation between the working week and the weekend.
Nice. Good for you. I love golfing.
It's good. It's good for me. I'm not very good at it, but that's a different thing altogether. And then, you know, and then that takes you nicely into the weekends. I've got three children, so there's always, you know, there's always something going on, you know, whether my young lad has golf lessons, or whether it's tennis or dancing clubs that the girls are part of. So there's always something to do, you know, in the family of the weekend. And, you know, that's great as well. I also like running as well. So it's another good way to relieve stress and just to get that kind of mental space to yourself. Just put the headphones in and go and enjoy. So I kind of have a bit of a routine, have certain things that I enjoy in my personal life. And I think that's important, you know, because, you know, we, as you said there, you know, warp speed projects, you know, even before warp speed projects, you know, projects were still challenging environments, and a lot of people work, you know, so, you know, some late hours sometimes, and some extended hours, and, you know, that sometimes is necessary, but it should be exception rather than the norm. But when those times occur, you've got to have a way, you know, to have a personal outlet in your life and make sure that you get that balance right.
Yeah, I agree with you, Glenn. I think that one thing I like to do is go bike riding. And sometimes, you know, I'll take a bit of an extended lunch break and go out and do about 10 miles on the bike in about an hour, and come back and feel a lot more mentally refreshed and ready to handle all the responsibilities. But it is very important, I think, no matter how hard we're working, to make sure to take breaks, because it does make you more accurate and I think more efficient in the work you do, because if your brain feels overwhelmed, it's not going to be very productive and it's going to start making mistakes.
Yeah, burnout's a really real thing too.
Absolutely. You know, I think you need those regular breaks. And I think that's why I think in time, you know, now perhaps, you know, the outlook is starting to look brighter in certain regions. Certainly, with, you know, vaccination programs going well in certain countries, I think it would be nice to sort of start to see, you know, that 100% remote working environment come back to a much more flexible, you know, dare I say, hybrid approach. Because I think it's also good for to have that interaction, you know, to kind of have a little break where you go to the kitchen and you have a coffee, you know, time away from your screen, and you have, you know, a little conversation with one of your work colleagues that you may not have seen face to face for the last 18 months. And that is all really positive and good for us all to sort of just go back to that, those little slices of normality again.
Yeah. In the States here, we've been having, in our North Carolina office at least, we've been having Wednesday, since we're opened up pretty much in a lot of places, we're having Wednesday as the day that everybody comes in and works in the office. So it was amazing to see friendly faces for a bunch of them for in like a year and a half for the first time for me last week. It was a really good feeling. Felt like a drug almost. Felt like I was high off human interaction. It was because we'd been deprived from it for so long. You know, so I think it helps you put a human face to work, and that makes it a lot easier, I think. So I think you're right. And hopefully more offices are able to come back to that flexible hybrid schedule here soon so that people can have that human aspect of work come back into their lives.
Well, hopefully the future kind of gives businesses and people almost the best of both worlds, you know, that we can have professional spaces for our teams to work productively in. And have that little bit of flexibility that we need in modern day personal lives. And, I think that's something that IPS are really good at getting the balance.
I agree. Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree too.
So Glenn, do you have a favorite publication, a magazine, a website, or an aggregator that covers the life science industry and keeps you up to date?
So not necessarily a favorite publication, but regularly visit the ISPE website. Because that's, you know, great source of information. There's all kinds of things on there around, yeah, different publications, events, there's webinars, and also I've really enjoyed a number of the IPS webinars and lunch and learns that have been made available recently. There was one we talked quite a lot about warp speed on this call, and I recently joined one that was all about warp speed, a webinar that was conducted and it was attended. I looked in, there was about 300 people from around the business that attended. I mean, that's brilliant, you know. So I think, you know, that type of sharing, that type of knowledge share, you know, across the business, I think is just brilliant. So those would be the two main areas, I think, where I go to places.
Nice. Those lunch and learn sessions are really impactful, I think, too. So for those of you listening that aren't aware, what we do internally is if someone gives a presentation externally, we want to make sure we share that with our employees and keep our employees up to date with different trends that are happening in the industry, different technologies and innovations that have come up. I think just sharing that knowledge internally is great because people don't have time to sit through all the webinars. So being able to attend these sessions through our intranet and view them on demand is really impactful. And it shows that we care about our employees because we want to teach them. What is the most important, useful, or memorable piece of career advice that you have received and would like to share?
Well, maybe the most memorable, and I suppose because it stuck in my mind, and it was like the first week that I started work. So it was the beginning of my career. And there was, I sat next to a principal process engineer. And they're kind of, I don't know whether it was advice or just an observation. He said, you know, wherever you start in your career path, you might think you've kind of got this plan, this kind of linear path that you'll follow, but that's unlikely to happen. And there'll be all kinds of like twists and turns along the way. And some of them you will plan and some of them you won't plan. But actually to just kind of, you know, enjoy the path that's kind of weaved out in front of you and kind of try and make the most of each step within that career path. And I don't know, you know, whether that was just because it was my first week and, you know, at work or or whether it was particularly, you know, great sort of piece of observation by that person. I don't know, but it's just always stuck in my mind. And so, you know, I've been lucky that all of the roles I've had during my career, I've thoroughly enjoyed, and, you know, I've just met some great people along the way as well. So it's been nothing but an enjoyable career so far, and long may it continue at IPS.
That's great advice. Thanks.
That's good to hear. Thank you. So what is the most memorable project you have been a part of and why?
Right. Well, I mean, I've had a lot of good memories. And there's one particular project that was a fast track project that I refer to a lot, but you know, people who know me will know which one I'm referring to. And it was one that I was personally responsible for project managing around 10 years ago. And it was just one of those projects that was amazing from beginning to end. It was absolute joy. You know, we had no safety issues. We had no quality issues. We reduced the delivery time scale by over 30% and still brought the project within overall budget. We had great team building celebration events during the course of the project. And everybody that was involved just had a great feeling, you know. And the real kind of icing on the cake was our customer relationship. It was fantastic. And they were brilliant at providing feedback. You know, sometimes it's not always easy to get feedback from clients, especially formally. But they actually produced a formal report for us every single month with what we're doing well and areas that we can improve and support that they could provide to us. And they did a two-year program, you know, they did 24 reports and we averaged a score of 94% in those 2 years. And, you know, and to this day, I'm still, you know, very close friends with the client's project manager. So it was just one of those just amazing projects that, you know, will always stand out for me just because of the experience that we as a team all went through. It just, every day was just great on that particular project.
That is really good to hear. I think that it's rare to see a project go that smoothly, but when it does, I'm sure it's a very good feeling.
I mean, I go back to what I said earlier. We had problems. You know, we had some issues. We had to remove the steelwork contractor from the project for build up of minor safety issues. But it got to a point where we thought, well, you know, this is only going in the wrong direction, and that cost us, you know, 5 weeks on the program that we had to recover. But as I said before, you know, problems will occur, but it's how the team come together to be able to solve those problems. And there was no blame. It was more about, okay, this has happened. Like, how do we work together to find the right solutions? You know, that's why I would encourage, you know, all of our projects to do. You know, there's no way you'll go through a major EPCMB project and find there won't be a problem. There will be an issue. How you solve it is the real key to success.
Glenn, what is the most challenging insecurity you've had to overcome in your career? You know, obviously anything you feel comfortable talking about, but anything you want to share?
I don't know whether it's an insecurity within your career, but I think you're always trying to balance the right level of effort, you know, within your both your professional and personal life. You know, we talked about that work-life balance thing earlier. In very senior roles, you could work 24/7, and you know, but obviously that's not healthy, and it's not something that should be encouraged. You've always got to find that right balance about, you know, kind of, you know, are you putting the right effort? You putting the maximum or most productive level of effort you can into your, you know, working week, you know, and are you balancing that in the right way for you personally and for the loved ones that are around you? So I think that's always something. That's always that balance is always something that is a challenge to try and achieve. You know, are you working hard enough? Are you playing hard enough? And it's getting that right that I think is probably something that I've struggled with, I think, at times over the course of my career today.
Yeah, I agree. And especially like with COVID and all the projects that we're doing for our clients, it's really easy to get sucked into working 24/7. But, you know, I try to remind myself too, I'm like, I'm a human, not a robot. You are not built to be sitting there staring at a computer screen 24/7.
Absolutely. And this, again, this comes back to our homes have become our offices, and it'd be nice to kind of move gently away from that a little bit, wouldn't it? And because you can find that the days are extending, and it's our responsibility. I don't think you know, I don't think the business puts those demands on us. I think it's our personal responsibility to get that balance right for ourselves.
Yeah, I agree.
So, Glenn, what is your most memorable career war story?
Well, I suppose it goes back quite a few years. So I used to I used to work in the construction side of the industry, and in the UK there's quite a lot of like aging facilities, like very old facilities, and some of those plants, the standards were less than ideal, you know, and the safety just wasn't taken as seriously as you know what we're fortunate enough to join the life sciences sector, you know, today, thank goodness. I've seen people voluntarily walking across, you know, high level steelwork without access or full protection. In one particular project, I actually saw somebody leap from the top of one vessel to another vessel. You know, just thank goodness that we don't see this type of behaviour in our projects anymore. Thank goodness. And I've just realised just how old this is making me sound now. So.
Did that person that hop from vessel to vessel, like, think he was Superman or something? What the heck?
Well, he wouldn't have been if he mistimed that jump. But, you know, just absolutely, you know, just incredibly bizarre behavior that somebody would put themselves at risk. And as I say, thank goodness that kind of thing, you know, we don't see anymore.
I agree with that. Holy crap. Okay, so, hard question. Who do you enjoy working with the most at IPS and why?
I suppose I'm going to take a coward's way out here. I like, because I think it'd be unfair to name any one individual because there's just so many great people in the business. I do have a really strong senior leadership team within the UK. They're all, you know, incredibly talented in their particular areas of expertise. And they have a real passion as well for the success of the business. So I'm very, very fortunate to have such a great team in the UK that I work with, and yeah, so and they just work so hard as well. So they're which are really, really good guys.
So Glenn, tell me more about what you learn from your colleagues at IPS.
So I sit within the EMEA executive team, and as I said previously, you know, we've now got four offices. So I've got, you know, colleagues that work alongside in Ireland and Germany and Switzerland. And that team is a really diverse team. Everybody's got kind of different personalities, different skill sets. And as we talked about before, coming from different regions, you know, there are different cultures involved. There's a really good, you know, camaraderie within the team. There isn't a time when I don't believe that we can not talk openly about issues. You know, if we go back to that sharing story that we talked about earlier in terms of, you know, lunch and learn and sharing. And it's a great environment to share good working practices, to share lessons learned, to share how there are differences, you know, across the business. So that group of people in particular, you know, we don't come together as much as we'd like to because, you know, we all have our sort of own areas of responsibility. But I think when we do come together, we have great debates and, you know, we do each time move things forward, you know, in the right direction. Another great group of people that I work with within IPS. So incredibly lucky to be, you know, part of all these different teams that are across the business.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I think having a diverse skill set around you is very useful for picking up new information and also having your perspective challenged so that you can create projects and come up with ideas that are going to work out in the real world. As if everybody thinks the same way, it's going to be a lot harder to really test those ideas and peer review them, so to speak, so that you can produce something that's robust.
I'm not sure they learn very much from me, but that's a different story altogether.
Oh my goodness. No, I'm sure they learned so much from you. Going off of that, our EMEA region is growing so much. You said that we're up to, what, 120 people?
But the UK is around 120. The European region is well over 200 now. So that's gone from literally, you know, three people to well over 200 in five, just gone 5 years, which, you know, it's like incredible rate of growth, you know.
Seriously. And so if someone located in the EMEA region is, you know, looking for a job in the life sciences industry, What advice do you have for them if they have an interview with IPS? Because EMEA is growing. We are looking for more people. What advice do you have for them? Like, what would make them stand out in an interview or on the resume?
You know, we obviously talk a lot about knowledge, skill, and passion. Okay. And, you know, and I think there are different ways of looking at things. And obviously, technical skill and capability is important, absolutely. But actually, that passion, that willingness to want to be part of this really important sector, this really important business, I think that is really important. You know, there's lots of people around our business that are always willing to help, always willing to help somebody, to develop somebody, to point them in the right direction. So, you know, that would be my advice, that worry kind of less, you know, about the kind of, you know, it ticking all the boxes from a technical point of view. But if you've got that desire to kind of learn and develop, evolve, and, you know, work alongside, you know, really good collaborative teams, I think you'll always go a long way. You know, that doesn't matter what stage in your career you're at, to be honest, whether you're just starting out as apprentice, graduate, it doesn't matter, or, you know, or you're kind of towards the latter end of your career. I think just that enthusiasm and that willingness to get involved and do something special, that's what's really important. And as you say, you know, at the moment, our sector is incredibly busy. You know, there's lots of opportunities. But I think what makes us kind of stand out is that cultural piece, that caring nature for people, you know, and wanting people to come in and work in the right environments. So having people that want to engage in that, be part of that, that's the best advice I could probably give.
So Glenn, who have your mentors been through your career journey, and how did you get connected with them?
There's been a number of like really experienced engineers. A lot of them have actually retired, you know, but a lot of them I worked alongside in my very early stages of project management. So when I first started to get into kind of leading my own projects, there were some really, really good people that not only were just fantastic at their project, but would take the time out, you know, to, you know, explain things in the right way, you know, so you as a project manager can make the right decisions, because project managers can't be experts in every single design, engineering, discipline or functional area of the business. You know, they have to have an appreciation of how all the interfaces work and have, you know, a good understanding from a sort of slightly higher level than the people that are more involved in the detailed technical work. But these people that I'm referring to, I'm always impressed by their amazing technical capability and their work ethic. They understood that projects were demanding at times and they could be challenging, but they also understood that they could be very rewarding as well. You know, certainly the ones, there's still some people that actually there is my actual formal mentor when I was an apprentice actually works within the IPS business within Birmingham, so he will know who he is. But there are others that have retired, and you know, I kind of miss all of those guys, you know, but I'm glad they're now enjoying the results of their hard work and dedication to the industry.
Okay, Glenn, we try our best to ask a fun question for all of our interviewees. So what is a fun but true fact about you?
So when I was young, when I was a young lad, I used to like playing a game called snooker. So I don't know whether you've heard of snooker. So it's sort of a game, it's a bit like billiards or a bit like pool, but on quite a large 12-foot table. And I was quite good. I was quite good at playing snooker. But at the time when I was young, there was a really famous snooker player around at the time that was kind of winning all the world championships. And his name was Steve Davis, and he had a nickname called Steve Interesting Davis, obviously, because he was so dull. Now, apparently, I look a lot like him. I've never seen the resemblance, but you can Google Steve Interesting Davis, compare him to my MS Teams profile, and see what you think.
Oh my gosh, so did people mistake you for the actual guy?
No, because he would have been, you know, 20. I would have been 13, 14. But it's just the fact that both of us had ginger hair. I looked quite a lot like him. And I was a decent snooker player, and he was world champion at the time. So it just all came together, and people just commented on it over the years. Both of us have got grey hair now, unfortunately.
That's awesome. Thanks so much for sharing. Thanks so much for joining us, Glenn. It was so nice chatting with you.
Yes, thank you,
no
Glenn.
No problem at all. Thanks very much. It's been a real pleasure.
Phase One is brought to you by the Emerging Professionals Committee at IPS. Thanks to our podcast production team, Amy Armstrong, Mike Mobby, Megan Ryan, and introducing to our team, Sarah Bilger.
For more information about this episode, please visit the Phase One website, www.anchor.fm/phase1. If you'd like to contact the Phase One podcast team, please email phase1podcast@ipsdb.com. That's the number one, phase1podcast@ipsdb.com. For more information about IPS, please visit ipsdb.com. Please rate, review, and subscribe to Phase One on any of the major podcast hosting platforms.